This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick in for John Hockenberry today. Well, the fighting continues today between Hamas and Israeli military forces. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton heads to the Middle East today, her first stop in Jerusalem to meet with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. She'll then meet with Palestinian leaders in the West Bank, make a third stop to Cairo to confer with Egyptian leaders. Of course, no meeting scheduled with leaders of Hamas. She's in the region just as Egyptian President Mohamed Morsi announced that Israel's, quote, aggression against Gaza will end Tuesday. Does that mean a possible ceasefire is afoot? We'll see where that statement leads. But despite this being one of the most intractable problems, there have been moments of reconciliation, promises of peace in the past between Arabs and Israelis.
During the past 30 years, Israel and Egypt have waged war. But for the past 16 months, these same two great nations have waged peace. Today we celebrate a victory.
That was 1979. President Jimmy Carter helped negotiate the Camp David Accords between Egypt and Israel. And then later this.
Finally, the time is approaching when there will be safety in Israel's house, when the Palestinian people will write their own destiny, when the clash of arms will be banished from God's holy land.
That was in the 90s. President Bill Clinton led negotiations between Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat and Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. And then it was George W. Bush's turn to take a hand.
The task begun here at Annapolis will be difficult. This is the beginning of the process, not the end of it. And no doubt a lot of work remains to be done.
President George W. Bush pushed Ehud Olmert at the time and Mahmoud Abbas to meet in Annapolis in 2007. The result was a signed document promising, well, more talk. Today we have three key voices who can help us get a little bit of perspective on what it takes to bring these two sides together. What was needed of the leaders involved and what were the lessons for the current conflict that we find ourselves in? They often say past is prologue, maybe especially with the parties involved in the current conflict between Israel and Gaza. We want to start with William Quant. Bill helped negotiate the Camp David Accords under Presidents Nixon and Carter. He's now a professor of politics at the University of Virginia. Professor Quant, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, you heard a little bit of the historical perspective there. Bring us back to Camp David. At the time, help us remember these two warring parties, two warring nations, if you will. What did Israel, we'll deal with both parties in turn, what did Israel feel like it had at stake? What did it have to gain by coming to the table? It was Menachem Begin at the time. What drew him to the table with the United States and with his enemies?
It wasn't trust or love of the enemy, and that's usually the way these negotiations start, with a lot of distrust. But the foreign minister of Menachem Begin, Moshe Dayan, said to me once, if we can take one wheel off the car, it can't be driven. What he meant is if Egypt makes peace with us, there will be no more Arab-Israeli wars of the kind that they had just experienced, that is, real state-to-state wars. Without Egypt, there was no threat of a state-to-state war. So for Israel, it was the prospect of no more 1973 wars, no more 1967 wars. Of course, it didn't mean full peace. We're seeing that today in Gaza.
What about Anwar Sadat's incentive as president of Egypt?
Sadat had concluded after 73 that the military option offered nothing more than he had already achieved, that they couldn't defeat Israel. The United States was solidly in Israel's corner. His backer, the Soviet Union, was a power in decline as he saw it. What he wanted, I think, more than anything else, was a shift of relations from Egypt's alignment with the Soviet Union to an alignment with the United States. And he knew that the price of that was to make peace with Israel, that there was no chance that the United States would, in a sense, adopt Egypt as a regional partner, providing aid, economic and military, unless Egypt made peace. So these were big thinkers. They had their eye on a long-term strategic outcome that required that they make some difficult decisions on the Egypt-Israel front, and they were willing to do it. Even then, it didn't come easily.
And do you see then real antecedents to the problem that we face today, this week? You have a Palestinian leadership that is bifurcated. Certainly the Israelis talk to Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority, but he's not the problem today. Hamas is. They don't seem to have a long-term strategic goal except the destruction of Israel. The Israelis, meanwhile, feel like they're dealing with attacks on their border and not dealing in any way with anything approaching an honest broker. It almost seems like your chapter in this story is, in a way, unrelated to what's going on today in terms of a lesson.
Well, it's very different, except for the fact that sometimes it takes a crisis to focus people's attention on what really matters. And we're perhaps in one of those crises now, although we've been here before and it hasn't really cleared people's minds all that much. But I do think that it's a reminder that what appears to be a moment of calm in the Middle East can be broken very quickly. And that if we really want to ensure that this doesn't just happen every few years, we really do need to think about whether coming out of this crisis, there is some way that we can lay the groundwork for ensuring that it just won't happen again.
We're looking today for some of the lessons of history in conflict between Israel and its Arab neighbors. William Quant is part of that history. He helped negotiate the Camp David Accords with Presidents Nixon and Carter, now a professor at the University of Virginia. Professor, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Continuing our search now for the lessons of history in the Middle East, let's bring in Itamar Rabinovich. He's a former ambassador of Israel to the United States, currently based at Tel Aviv University. Ambassador Rabinovich is also the author of The Lingering Conflict. It's an account of his role in Israel's involvement in peace and war since the Oslo Accords in 1993. Ambassador, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
So, Ambassador, what does Israel have to offer now? It's easy to see what Israel has to offer the Palestinian Authority and Mahmoud Abbas. But we all know that's not who you're dealing with at this point. You're dealing with Hamas, which is judged by this country anyway as a terrorist organization, certainly judged by your country as such. What does Israel have to offer them except defeat for a ceasefire or a broader deal?
No, Israel is willing to offer them peace and quiet, keeping the status quo. Earlier Israeli governments wanted to topple the Hamas, the Operation Cast Lead. This recent operation or clash has much more modest aims from Israel's point of view. Israel wants to reestablish peace and quiet. It wants Hamas to avoid either terrorist attacks or shooting missiles, and it reestablished rules of deterrence, no rules of the game. So, you know, for Hamas to be recognized by Israel, it will have to meet the same criteria that the U.S. and Western Europe put forth.
Ambassador, from the perspective of an American, we know that we will never see a television image of our president between the warring factions here the way we saw in the past, as long as Hamas is at the table. President Obama will never appear alongside the political leader of Hamas, even if he would with Abbas and Netanyahu. So is there ever hope of the kind of broad agreements that we've seen in the past, at least the images of such, as long as Hamas is on the scene?
We speak often about what we call a two-state solution, an Israeli state and a Palestinian state. Unfortunately, at this point, we have a three-state situation because Gaza, to all intents and purposes, is a de facto state or statelet that is as hostile to the Palestinian Authority as it is to Israel. It wants to replace Abbas and to take over the whole Palestinian national movement. So if Hamas wants to join the fray, it needs to shed some of its terrorist characteristics now, to accept Israel as a legitimate state, to commit to respect the agreement signed in the past with the Palestinians, and to commit not to engage in terror. These are three plain and simple rules. If they do that, they can come to the table.
You're listening to one of the voices of experience in dealings between Israel and its Palestinian Arab neighbors. That's Itamar Rabinovich, former ambassador from Israel to the United States, currently at Tel Aviv University. Ambassador, thank you.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
Well, as we just heard, the Camp David Accords were successful in bringing about peace between two warring nation states, Israel and Egypt. But maybe there's a lesson in other peace accords. The Intifada, the second Intifada in the West Bank and Gaza, was an entirely different set of problems for Israel, for Palestinians, and for the United States. They led eventually to the Oslo Accords, which President Bill Clinton helped to broker during his presidency. Martin Malley was a member of the National Security Council in the Clinton administration. He helped negotiate the Oslo Accords, Robert Malley, rather. And he is now a program director at the International Crisis Group. Robert Malley, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Do you see a parallel, perhaps a greater parallel, between what you and President Clinton helped broker, the Oslo Accords and the Second Intifada, with what is going on now between a non-state actor, Gaza, you know, in Gaza, in Israel, versus the successes of Camp David? Is there more of a parallel with what you did?
Well, first, I was not involved in Oslo, unfortunately. I was involved in the failed attempt at Camp David, so I can't take credit for that. But I do think that they are that they're important lessons. First lesson, and I think Bill Quandt said it earlier, is that sometimes crises both change things on the ground and enlighten outsiders as to what is actually happening. And in that sense, they are a wake-up call, and they allow, in this case, the United States to adjust its policies to the realities of the region. And that's one lesson, obviously, of what happened after the first intifada, not so much after the second intifada. The second lesson is what you're referring to now, which is sometimes in adjusting, we have to understand that there are new actors, that the balance of power has changed, and that we can't simply continue dealing as if nothing had been altered. And the PLO at the time of Oslo was the organization that the United States had to deal with. Now we have the challenge of Hamas, which is, if anything, a greater one. And I understand why, for all the reasons one could think of, this president cannot deal with Hamas. But it doesn't mean that there aren't indirect ways of dealing with them, and at least taking into account the fact that today, the actor that is making noise on the Palestinian side, the actor that people are focused on, the one that can change reality, is not Fatah. Even though that may be the organization we feel closer to, it is Hamas.
Does an advisor like you from the National Security Council advising a president at this moment say, Mr. President, Hamas can be dealt with even if it's through indirect means, or they have to be marginalized politically, maybe by their own people, before we can get a broader deal?
Well, I think the experience of the last several years shows that marginalization is a dead end. I mean, we may put our heads in the sand and think that Hamas doesn't exist or that its people are going to reject it. It just, in some ways, goes from strength to strength. I think, on the other hand, what you can tell the president is that the realities in the region are changing. Our allies today, Qatar, Turkey, even Egypt, are three countries with which we have good relations. All three of them have good relations with Hamas. All three of them are sending their officials into Gaza. All three of them are involved in an attempt to both coax Hamas, but also to recognize its legitimacy. And so without dealing directly with Hamas, I think we can take into account the fact that our allies in the region are dealing with it. And as I say, indirectly, that offers opportunities that might not have existed before.
All right. Some wise advice and some lessons of history. Robert Malley is the Middle East Program Director at the International Crisis Group. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a week of high-level negotiations. We want to know, what are your negotiating tactics, whether it's in the Middle East, in your home, of course? How do you mediate conflict? They could probably use your advice, too. Weigh in on Twitter. You can always follow us at twitter.com/thetakeaway, and you can always call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE.